I made Brian laugh.
Yes, you did. This whole idea of learning how to count 1 through 10 is something that obviously Mickey skipped in primary school.
So for those of you that weren't privy to this, which is everyone, Brian and I were trying to figure out how to, we record our audio separate, and then I sync it up into the final master file. So I was counting down a few seconds of silence, specifically 10 seconds of silence, so that I have some silence to be able to master everything down. And unfortunately, somewhere between 6 and 7, I kind of forgot which finger to hold up.
Which is pretty funny, if you ask me.
It's very funny. Hi, everybody, and welcome to DevOps FM. Today, or tonight, is Tuesday, July 14th, 2020, and I am coming to you from the safety and security of my bunker, aka my recording studio in my basement. Brian, where are you?
Well, as usual, I am in my office, which would be a formal living room if we were a formal type family, but instead it is my office. My doors are closed. My family is fed, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to record uninterrupted this evening.
Well, let's talk a little bit about weather before we talk about DevOps, because it's freaking hot in Mississippi right now. And by hot, I mean, it's like upper 90s with the heat index because of all the humidity of like, it feels like the surface of the sun. I go to walk down to the mailbox, and when I get back from the mailbox, I am drenched. And I grew up in this, and I swear as a kid, I had a much higher tolerance for the weather here, or I'm just getting old and crotchety. I haven't decided which. How are things out in California?
It's been really hot. Now, that said, it got over the weekend over 100, I think it was 102 degrees Fahrenheit. However, that's not the hottest it's been. In fact, for us, the last 5-10 years, September has been our hottest month. And I've had as high as 115 on my porch. Now, that said, this weekend, across the United States, we've had this heat dome, as they've called in the news. I think maybe you've seen some of that, Mickey.
I have indeed.
But Death Valley, which we drove near, we didn't drive through Death Valley, but we drove with it. It would have been, as we head north to Vegas, it would have been on our left, Mickey. In fact, we stopped at the Alien Beef Jerky store, which is in Baker, which is which is the gateway to Death Valley.
Because we talked about, hey, do we want to take a detour? And then we said, no, let's not do that this time.
Well, and part of it is because if you get stuck, it could basically ruin our arrival time to actually do our jobs. But anyway, the point is Death Valley this weekend hit their second highest temperature of 127 degrees Fahrenheit. That's hot. Now,
I'm just sitting here with my mouth open because that's freaking miserable.
Yeah, the brain does not compute after a certain percentage. Now, I'll grab the article. I read a really good article about this. I think it was CBS who had it. But they had a whole discussion about how the original highest number goes back to like 1913 for Death Valley. But what they're saying is that they think it was wrong because they kind of looked at other temperatures at that date time across other parts of the Southwest, and they found that there typically is around an 8-degree variance, and for Death Valley versus everything else, it was like 18 degrees. So they think it was actually either an observational error or a technology error. So they're saying that the hottest on record, and I'm going to get this wrong, but I'll have to post the article, 2013 or 2003 was the highest, which was like 128 point something. So wicked hot. Thankfully, like I said, it didn't get as hot as it's been at my front door. And the good news is the air conditioning continues to operate.
There you go. That all sounds good to me. And I just turned off my phones because you may hear a little bit of noise because for some reason today my phone decided to interact while Brian was talking. But the beauty of if Mickey remembers it, he'll blank out that part of his audio. we'll see what happens.
You're so smart, Mickey.
I am. So, Brian, what have you been up to? I mean, you know, it's been a week since I talked to you. Surely you've been busy.
Been very busy. Still loving the fact that I'm getting to write code just about every day. Spent a bit of the end of the week and then the weekend preparing for a training session I did on Monday for about 4 hours, with the central topic being getting more out of Azure Boards. Azure Boards, if you're not aware, is the component of Azure DevOps that you use to plan and track work. That was a lot of fun. And one thing I got to spend more time with was revisiting using Power BI to analyze data. If you look at Azure DevOps, it's had a storied history from TFS, self-host on-prem, all the way through to the service in how reporting was done. One of the unique things about TFS when it first came out is it had a built-in reporting component. It would store data in a SQL Server Analysis Service cube, and they then used SSRS, aka SQL Server Reporting Services, to generate reports. Now, over time, that's changed. I mean, Mickey, you've dealt with this, right?
I have. I will be completely honest with you. I was never very successful with the Analysis Cube and SSRS in the earlier versions of TFS. But I have seen some of the stuff that you can do now with Power BI and things like that. And I think that's probably a much better way to be going.
Yeah. And what's interesting about it, specifically around boards, is the team has tried many, many times to figure out what the best way to do things is when it comes to a multi-tenant cloud hosted service. In doing this, what they came out with a while back was this notion of what they call the analytics service. And you define views in the analytics service that you then can query from tools like Power BI. And I've done that in anger for customers, and it's pretty cool. However, they changed their mind again and said, we're not necessarily going to do analytics across all of the services. And instead, they've exposed the data via OData.
Brian, can you explain exactly what OData is? Because, I mean, I know conceptually kind of what it is, but if you told me, hey, Mickey, explain OData in 30 seconds or less, then I would probably have to go, hold on, let me Google that for you.
Well, OData is basically, I think it's the Open Data Protocol. And it's basically a REST-based API on top of a endpoint, it exposes a REST-based API style endpoint that you can use to query a data source. And the key thing is that there's a standard structure to the way the data formats look. That's probably the best I could use to describe it.
Okay, that makes sense. I'm sure our listeners will appreciate that.
Probably not, but that's okay. In either case, you can take Power BI and provide it with an OData query, and the whole Power BI magic happens. Every time I sit down with Power BI, I come away saying I gotta spend more time with Power BI. So, folks, kids at home, if you're looking for something to learn, Power BI definitely. And then if you use Azure DevOps, take a look at using Power BI to use both the analytics views, but you want to look at the OData stuff, because not only does it let you pull back work item related data like Azure Boards, is they have exposed data for some of the other services. So that's where they're going to do things for any type of custom reporting, etc. So that's what I've been up to. What about you, Mickey?
Sweet. And it's interesting that you bring up Azure Boards, because when we get to what Mickey can't let go of this week, I actually have an Azure Boards thing, but that'll be a little bit later. So what I've been up to since last time we talked is pretty much drinking from the fire hose that is GitHub. As you know, my team moved over to GitHub, and I have been getting my bearings. I have been working with a customer last week and this week. Yes, Brian, we hear that you're drinking something.
No, the question is, are you drinking from the fire hose, or are you drinking from like a Alabama Slammer, for example, a nice cocktail for the summer?
No, I'm drinking from the fire hose. There's so much to learn.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And I've been working with a customer and one of our partners and a couple of people from GitHub to do a GitHub Enterprise server and an Azure DevOps server integration, where we're installing them both self-hosted and integrating with Azure boards and Azure pipelines. That has been fun and challenging because I've realized there's some stuff around Azure DevOps that I didn't know that well, honestly, around Azure boards that's come up. I've learned a lot about GitHub Enterprise Server and some tips and tricks for how you can tweak that and make it work better. Probably going to blog a little bit about that. And then trying to get a hold of, you know, where you go to do different things in GitHub, because at GitHub, we use GitHub to drive what we do internally. And that's everything from opening an issue because you need to requisition a new piece of hardware or software or get access to a certain system, to use issues for discussions, when you're trying to make a decision. Like, my team has a repo where we have issues open where we're discussing different things around my team. So it's just a different way of communicating than I was used to at, say, Microsoft. Email is the last place you go to talk to people. So it's a different mindset that has taken a little bit of, it's going to take a little time to completely wrap my head around. And then it's, of course, also there's the, oh, I'm the new person trying to get all the benefits in place, making sure health insurance is in place, making sure, you know, all the different benefits that you get. So it's just that's what I mean by drinking from the fire hose, wrapping my head around all the benefits, making sure everything's in place so I can work, so I can get paid, all that jazz. And then, of course, you know, getting to do all this GitHub Enterprise Server and Azure DevOps server integration I've been doing for the past couple of weeks has been really pretty cool.
So let me just make sure I understand this. You have a customer that's decided that, A, they want to self-host in this age of the cloud. Fine. And
there's a reason.
Okay. And B, they want to basically kind of do the whole Reese's cup thing. Chocolate and peanut butter, let's just smash them together. Is that what's going on?
Yes. So the customer has business reasons why they go self-hosted. As you can imagine, there's lots of different customers out there that for security reasons or other reasons or different entities that they may interact with, they require, you know, they haven't qualified or aren't willing or ready to use the cloud yet. And the customer in this case wants to start using GitHub because they're interested in some of the features that GitHub Enterprise Server is going to provide, but they're just going to use it right now for repos, for repositories. And of course, there's stuff in the future that they could potentially look at, such as GitHub Advanced Security, where we do all kind of dependabot and other kind of things to verify, you know, if your code's out of date, stuff like that. But they also need a really good tracking system for the work they need to do. And they need a really good system for doing CI/CD. Now, Azure Boards, hands down, is awesome from a tracking your work perspective. GitHub has issues. Issues is a good lightweight way of doing things, but right now Azure Boards has a lot more depth to it in how you can track your work. GitHub has GitHub Actions, which is coming along very well. It's got a lot of good stuff that it can do, but the client or the customer in this case right now has just decided that Azure Pipelines is the direction they would rather go. And since we have integration between GitHub Enterprise Server and Azure DevOps, just like we have integration between GitHub Enterprise Cloud and Azure DevOps, they just decided that the integration was the best way to do things.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, we don't have full support for GitHub Actions on GitHub Enterprise self-host yet, correct?
That is correct. Right now, it's not there. So the only CI/CD option they have at this point would be, if they were going to stay in the GitHub Microsoft family, would be Azure Pipelines. I mean, obviously, there's other third-party systems out there that do CI/CD. I'm kind of partial to Azure Pipelines.
Go figure. Just maybe our background has a little bit of influence on that.
It might.
All right. Well, that sounds like you're keeping pretty busy.
I am. I'm kind of, you know, Brian, if you'll remember, before I started working at Microsoft in 2018, which was only 2 years ago, before that, I was working for a System Center Azure company, and I wasn't really getting to do anything DevOpsy. And so being back in the DevOpsy world like I've been for the past 2 years, and now getting to continue that journey from a GitHub perspective, it's just, the future is very bright.
That's awesome, man. I'm glad to hear it.
So let's jump into some news, Brian. Do you know anything new, you know, and exciting?
Well, as we discussed on a previous show, there's been a significant movement within the United States and even outside the U.S. around recognizing that we have a diverse culture, a diverse population, and we should treat each other nice, or definitely treat each other nice, more nice, as well as Black Lives Matter. And as part of that, something that's come up has been the use of certain terms in software. And I think while you can take the approach that what's the big deal, it is a big deal. The words we use to describe things on a day-to-day basis have meaning. And if we can do a little bit to make it more inclusive and more comfortable for people, I don't see why that's a big deal. So I fully support this idea of renaming and changing the defaults for what we do when it comes to version control with Git. For a lot of historical reasons, master was chosen, and it just was. I'll just leave it at that. You can RTFM, look on the internet about that. But what's coming out, and I've got 3 or 4 links that we'll add to the show notes, is that a large percentage of the community agrees that it would be good to change from master to an alternative, main being one of the most popular choices, which is interesting.
So just taking a step back, for anyone who might be relatively new to Git, when you say master, you're talking about the main branch. When you do a Git init, when you create a new Git repository, the main, what's considered the first branch that's created, that is the main line, whatever you want to call it, by default is normally named master, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, I just wanted to level set for some people that might be new to Git that are hearing this conversation.
Really? I'm just kidding. I'm just trying to be funny. So the reality is that Git init, as Mickey mentions, or if you use online tools like Azure DevOps or GitHub or Bitbucket, they follow that convention of what Git does, and it starts out your default branch as master. Whereas with TFVC, you never got really a master branch. What you got was $/ as the root of the main TFVC repo within a server, and then it started in 2010, a project collection. And then it was up to you to determine your naming convention. And what happened was you would get a root folder representing the name of a team project. And from there, the standard pattern we often did was a main, dev, and release branch structure. So for me, it was actually interesting when I first started using Git to have to deal with the cognitive dissonance of, well, I've always used main in TFVC, but there must be some reason they do master. And turned out, no, it's just what they chose. So it's this convention that gets followed by people.
Now, and what's interesting is I've been privy to a lot of different conversations around this lately, this whole renaming the master branch to be main, default, whatever it wants to be. And a lot of people say, well, master slave isn't about a racial reference. It's about, you know, we talk about like databases or hard drives or whatever being linked that way and this, that, and the other. It's just a term that we've had in the industry for years and years. Why can't we just keep it? To which my response is, what does it matter? If there is a group of people that find it offensive. What's the big deal in changing that kind of terminology? It doesn't hurt you. Are you not going to be able to get up and do your job the next day because we had to make that change in order to make everything more inclusive for a group of people? So I talked last week about how the fact that I'm kind of on this, I won't say journey of enlightenment, but I'm realizing a lot of crap from my past and upbringing, and I'm trying to do better and learn more. And I'll admit, my initial reaction to when we need to change this name, I went, well, why? Because your immediate reaction to any time somebody wants to change something on you is, no, you don't get to change that. But then I realized that that was just a knee-jerk reaction. And again, what can we do to be more inclusive to more people, to keep more people in tech, to bring more people into this? If changing a name from master to main does that, I am all for it.
And that's just it, right? I want to have a community that people are welcome in, regardless of, you know, race, color, creed, et cetera. I want my children to be able to move into that. And so I support it. And like I said, we've got a couple links. One is just on the Git project renaming the default. So when you type Git init, you'll get a different branch name, most likely main. GitHub has said that they're looking to support it. And this comes most notably from a tweet by Nat Friedman, this CEO of GitHub, as well as I've got a link to a ZDNet article that's entitled GitHub to replace master with alternative term to avoid slavery references, which is what a lot of people immediately think of. And you can say, well, I don't. And that's awesome that if you don't think that way, but other people do. And finally, this has even moved into the world of Linux. You know, Linus Torvalds has not always been the standard bearer when it comes to inclusivity and friendliness.
That would be an understatement, but okay.
But even Linus seems to be on a journey to change over the last few years. And so I've got a link where they talk about how Linux is going to change their repos to support that, as well as removing additional terms in the software. So bottom line is, I think it's a great move on the part of the community at large. I support it, and I hope it makes DevOps more inclusive.
And in my mind, that's kind of only just the beginning. There's a lot of different terms that we use in our industry that could be seen as not being inclusive. Some of the other ones I've heard talked about are like whitelist and blacklist. Whitelist being good, blacklist being bad. So I'm going to go look. I've got a list of resources that I have internally. I want to see which ones of those are can be shown externally or not. But I have a link to a bunch of different resources that talk about racially or diverse and inclusive language. And, you know, these are the things that you should be using. These are the things you shouldn't be using. And I found that list very eye-opening for me. So I'm going to go see which of those links is external public, and I'll put those in the show notes.
Yeah, the ZDNet article on what Linux is doing lists things like, you know, changing master slave to include either primary, secondary, main replica, or subordinate, initiator, target, requester, responder, etc. And then going back to the blacklist, whitelist, deny list, allow list, block list, pass list. So it doesn't take much to really just remove that from your vocabulary. And so once again, fully support it.
Me too. And all of us here at DevOps FM fully support Black Lives Matter, fully support diversity, inclusivity, and belonging. So I'm also very excited to see GitHub trying to lead the way in a lot of this, especially around replacing the name master.
So other things I saw is a common thing that people want is a richer experience when working with Git. And obviously, you know, GitHub did a lot to drive that by building a really easy to use user interface on top of it. But a lot of people want a better experience at their client. You and I, as Visual Studio users, enjoy having Git and GitHub functionality available within Team Explorer. But on the other hand, there's people that like different clients. There's quite a few out there that do this, and one of them is Tower. And Tower 5 for the Mac is just released. They do have a version that runs on Windows and other platforms as well, but I got a link for the show notes that talks about some new stuff they're doing to make Git more accessible from a native client. And so that's kind of neat.
Interesting. So I've actually been trying to force myself to use Git and GitHub more from the command line here lately. Git, because Git is, you know, obviously command line, but GitHub has a GitHub CLI now, command line interface, that you can use to do almost everything, open pull requests, all that jazz. So, but I have to admit, I do like having a graphical interface to work with. Though, of course, my tool of choice for the most part right now is Visual Studio Code. So it has to be something that would live in Visual Studio Code.
Ah, okay. Well, I still do a ton of work in Visual Studio proper, most notably Visual Studio 2019. And the team has been hard at work. They did some initial work that was released back in March of this year. And as of a few days ago, they've announced some new features that you can opt into. So there's a feature flag you can check inside the preview feature sections of tools options in Visual Studio 2019. And in there, they've got some new yummy Git-related goodness to make your lives better. So that's another thing worth taking a look at. I've got a link with screenshots. So if you're afraid to check the box, you can at least see what's going on there. So that's kind of cool.
Sweet. I like it. Well, dang, Brian, how do you find all this crap? I mean, incredibly useful information.
Well, I'm lucky. I have friends, and my friends still talk to me, so that's nice. But it starts with, I have a problem, and that problem is Twitter. Now, if you look at my Twitter account, you'll see I've maybe tweeted just over 10,000 times, which isn't a lot. I've had my Twitter account since 2008. In fact, if you look at my thing, it says I was Twitter user number, I want to say it was something like 14 million, which is fairly low in the scheme of things. I mean, I'm not a special 100,000 user or something. But if, you know, being on it as long as I have, yeah, 14, I was user 14,640,150. So in that long, I've only tweeted 10,315 times. So what this means is I'm a big lurker on Twitter. And to put that in perspective on sitting on Twitter or tweeting on Twitter versus lurking, I like to save links from tweets I find interesting. So articles, blog posts, etc. And what I do is I often save those to a tool called Pocket that integrates with my primary Twitter client of choice, Tweetbot for the Mac, which I love. Tweetbot for iOS, which also is on the Mac, which means that when I'm in line, I mean, I do this a lot when I was traveling. I'd be in line at the airport, waiting to get on the plane, waiting to get off the plane. And so I'd be constantly going through my feed and adding links to read later. So I'm a big geek, Mickey. If you haven't figured it out, folks, warning.
I have figured it out. So I use Twitter a good bit too. I'm hit and miss though.
I wasn't done. I'm sorry. I know Brian's talking a lot. Can I finish the last little bit?
You can, but you paused. Therefore I jumped in to make sure that there wasn't a long break in the story.
I'm trying to monitor my breathing and not be all over the feed. So anyway, the thing I was going to say is my problem comes in that in lurking, I've saved over 75,000 links.
That you're not going to go back and read all of them.
Well, but that's where things get fun. As a database wonk, I wrote a program that pulled all my link data out of Pocket. I've now got it in a local SQL Server database. And now I can do analysis and find my most saved links and the interesting links. So that's what I was going to say.
Okay. That's actually pretty cool. We've talked about that in the past. So it's I'm glad that you've actually got it written and are able to start doing that analysis on it. So that's really pretty cool. I've tried doing something similar. Initially, when I was using Twitter, I just followed almost everybody that followed me back. So I was following almost 1,000 people or more. And I realized that my trying to scroll the main feed was just an exercise in frustration. And that's where you introduced me to lists. And that's also where then I don't remember if it was you or someone else mentioned how they were paring down the number of people they actually follow to be a certain number. And then they used lists to track, to follow all that. I think it was you to follow, you know, just tons of other people. So I've actually got to where I tried to pare my list of people I actually follow down to less than 100. I think I'm at 140 right now. As far as like actually follow, but I actually have some of my, so I'm actually trying to do the list thing. So I have like a top 20 people that I have a list of my top 20 people that I try to look at least daily, because those are the people that, you know, I'm really interested in what they have to say. So I think you might actually be on there. And then I've got a list for like people I want to follow around Hearthstone. I've got some lists around Azure DevOps and GitHub and things like that. And my problem is I don't tend to curate my list very much, because I feel like I need to be adding, you know, I need to pay more attention to what's coming through on the list when people are retweeting other people, because then maybe I need to add them to the list so that their stuff starts showing up. And I haven't figured out a good way to manage my Twitter. So I go in spurts. You'll also probably notice that every once in a while I tweet a lot, like for 2 days in a row, a lot, and then I disappear for like 2 weeks. So ultimately I would say I'm probably a lurker, just like Brian. I did try to use an app called Buffer for a while to buffer my tweets to where they would just, you know, I could schedule when they would come out. And I have a lot of respect for people that are social media quote influencers, because it takes a lot of freaking time to set all this crap up. I don't know how people like Scott Hanselman and other people tweet as much as they do and do everything else that they do. It's insane.
I don't think Scott's human is part of it. It's funny you bring up Scott, because I did have one more link that I'll put in the show notes. So Scott's blogged about this. He's talked about it. And now he has a YouTube video that shows how to set up an awesome Git branch Windows terminal PowerShell plus Cascadia code. Sorry, I said it wrong. But it's called How to Set Up Awesome Prompt with Your Git Branch Windows Terminal PowerShell and Cascadia Code. Now, I haven't watched the video yet, but I've followed his blog post, and it changes your life. And I think Mickey may have run into this a few months back and was trying to do this when we were last together in Las Vegas. Was that right?
Yes, I've actually done this based off of his blog post, and it's really changing my prompt, changed my life.
Well, that's good to hear. So we'll include that in the show notes. Now, the other thing where I get news from, besides Twitter and friends, is I subscribe to a few newsletters. And I'm going to list two of my favorites. One is Azure Weekly. Now, this is done by some friends of mine in the UK. That's a company called Engine. And it's just full of yummy goodness related to Azure. They cover the entire spectrum. So you'll find links about Azure Compute, DevOps, Cosmos DB, etc. So that's a fun one. And the second one is done by another friend. It's called the Developer Weekly. And this is done by our friend, Ed Thompson, who works at GitHub and is currently working in packages and dealing with things like NPM and all the good stuff going on there. So those are two that I find are worthwhile to get in my inbox. And if you do anything with Azure, I can't recommend the Azure Weekly highly enough. And the bottom line is, I find getting extra links there. So, tip of the hat to, Ed and Engine for their newsletters. And in fact, Ed provided some of the initial inspiration for a few of the links that I'm going to share in the show notes.
Interestingly enough, I also follow some newsletters, but honestly, for the most part, they aren't tech newsletters. Surprise, surprise. Mickey, over the past few years, for whatever reason that we won't get into, has started to care a little more about current events, has started to care a little more about what's going on in the country, has started to care a little more about, you know, how he makes sure that he's not working till he's 90. So some of the newsletters that I actually read on almost a daily basis is there is a newsletter called Morning Brew. And it is a newsletter that talks about has business stuff in it, has social, has politics kind of stuff in it. It's a great, I read it daily. You've probably seen me tweet about it. I also subscribe to the New York Times daily newsletter and their tech newsletter, which I find interesting, but where it starts to bite me is every once in a while, they have a couple of the links in the newsletter that are to free articles, and then a lot of the links are to their behind their paywall. So while they give you a synopsis, if you want to read the details, you got to get behind their paywall, which I'm cheap and I don't get behind their paywall.
Good news costs money. I'm just going to say that. Whether it's
I agree.
The New York Times or anyone else that you like or don't like, good news costs money. Support your newspapers.
And when I do support my local newspaper, I subscribe to them, even though they've now quit doing a print edition and they only have a digital edition. But I do subscribe to my local newspaper. And the last newsletter that I get on a daily basis is one called The Daily Stoic. So I'm starting to get a little more into Stoic philosophy and how that can incorporate into my world. And so I find this newsletter has usually some good insights on a daily basis. So those are some of the things that I stay up to date with. But of course, Brian, the main way I stay up to date or the main way I problem solve, let's transition a little bit here. The main way I problem solve people is I basically say, I don't have a freaking clue. And I email what's called Mickey's Brain Trust. In fact, I think it used to be when I was at Microsoft, it was an actual group I had in my Outlook. Because Mickey's Brain Trust consists of Brian Randall, co-host of DevOps.fm, Martin Henshelwood, one of our co-authors on one of our mini books, and Ben Day, who can play piano and knows a little bit about DevOps up in Boston. So they're all MVPs, all people I've known for years. But literally, when I started at Microsoft and I was doing all this DevOps stuff and I didn't know the answers, I would email them and say, "Hey, Mickey's Brain Trust, how do you do this?" And most times they would come back with answers. Sometimes Martin would come back with snarky answers, but he would still give me some kind of answer. So that's kind of my go-to is when I don't know, I actually have finally gotten around to where I'll ask.
And I think that's the big thing is not being afraid to ask. And if you're blessed to have friends that you can go directly with, great. Twitter is good about that oftentimes, particularly if you run in circles where you know some of the more friendly people are. One of the things I really appreciated when Donovan Brown ran a team focused on DevOps is that he would keep his whole team on Twitter. That was a way that they gave back to the community, which is trying to get answers around Azure DevOps. The other thing, though, is to find a community you can work with, enjoy. There's many different online ones. There's Reddit. There's Stack Overflow. But I think the key thing is always you got to understand that you need to give back. And communities that thrive are those that have conversations where it isn't someone just asking 1,000 questions and never giving back. So hopefully with our podcast, we're giving back a little. And yeah, take a look at what's out there and try and get involved wherever you can.
I'm sorry, I got distracted because all my devices are off, but I was still getting cell phone feedback. So I have no idea. I'm going to blame it on Brian if you hear it in the recording. So what Brian's also trying to say with that comment is that Mickey asks a lot from his brain trust, but he doesn't ever seem to answer the questions that they send back out. That might be true.
I did not say that.
What's been awesome inside of GitHub, though, is in GitHub we use Slack, and there's several different channels. So I've been going to the professional services channel because GitHub has a professional services area where we go out and help people. And I'll go in there, and for a while I've been saying Mickey's question of the day, and I've just been asking the thing I couldn't solve that day. And it's just amazing all these people who don't know me from Adam that just jump in there and start, you know, I'll get 10, 15 responses on the thread of people giving me links and showing me, you know, well, here's where you could probably find the solution, or here's the repo you might want to look at next time for this. There's a saying inside of GitHub. I can't remember the exact saying, but basically, if it doesn't have a link, it doesn't exist. So you should, if you can find a link to something to provide an answer, you should always provide that link.
That sounds like a good thing.
So awesome. Well, Brian, it's that time of the podcast. No, not the after party. We're not there yet. But it's that time of the podcast where I just have to know, Brian, what can't you let go of over this past week?
Well, summer cocktails. We've, you know, we've been under quarantine for a few months. And so my wife and I, when we had chance to go out as adults, would often have a drink. And my wife would like to have a different cocktail. Whereas I'm often easy just, you know, get a beer and stick it with it. But since we're home, we started doing this. And long story short, I make a cocktail now with has lemon Pellegrino, San Pellegrino soda, limoncello, vodka, and ice. And I couldn't find exactly name, but I'm sure a listener, if they know it, can tell me. But if not, I came up with my own name. I call it TGIF Lemon. It's normally our Friday night cocktail. That said, we've chosen to go off the beaten path, and we've had it on a weekday.
Well, next time I will bring my bourbon, and we'll just be able to have a cocktail together on the air.
Well, there we go. We should do that.
So summer cocktails. That's awesome. I like summer cocktails.
We finished the James Bond series of Timothy Dalton by watching License to Kill last night. Now, normally, if you've been following along, dear listeners, we've been doing this as a Saturday night fiesta. However, this previous Saturday, the 11th, was my mother-in-law's 80th birthday. And while normally we would have gone out and celebrated late into the evening, we had to do it at home. And due to those celebrations around cake and phone calls and general fun, it got too late for this old fart to stay up and watch James Bond and function the next day. And so we put it off till Monday. And then last but not least, today is July 14th. Tomorrow is July 15th, which is the new tax day due to the pandemic here. So I've gotten one out of my three taxes done. I don't see the other two getting completely done. So we're already on extension and we'll see. But so far I'm in the hole $1,600.
You're still doing better than me.
Well, remember, that's only one out of three. Now, part of that is, I think, includes an estimated payment. Yes. But I am owing for last year, looks like $800. Yeah, I guess it's $800. So anyway, that's annoying, but it is a part of life, death and taxes. Mickey, what can't you let go of?
Interestingly enough, what I can't let go of is Azure Boards has some cool functionality in it that I didn't know was there, which is no big surprise because they keep adding functionality and I haven't been keeping up with it. But one of the things that I thought was really neat that got shown off to me today was this idea of a roll-up column where you can have when you're looking at the, I guess, the table view of your, of say like your user stories and your features and whatnot, you can have a roll up of how many of, like, if you've got, okay, I'm going to get this so wrong. Like, wow, y'all are going to laugh at me and go, Mickey used to be a DevOps, an ALM MVP. But essentially you can, like, for example, you've got tasks into a story or stories into a feature. You can get a roll-up that shows you for a feature how many of those stories have been completed, or for a story, how many of those tasks have been completed. We were dealing with Agile templates, not Scrum templates. That's why I'm using those particular work items. But there were all kind of different roll-up columns, and I was just like, that is so cool. And the partner I was working with today went through this whole spiel on Azure Boards with the customer, and it was just... It's obviously he's done this a lot, but it was really cool how he started with, all right, let's go create a couple of work items. Then he walked them through how you can set up all the areas and iterations and why those are important and how that deals with teams. Then we set up teams, and he had a really good flow to his story. So I took a lot of notes so I can try to figure out how to do that. But Azure Boards is just really cool. It just reinforced to me how if you need a more robust planning system right now for your work, that you can have the best of both worlds with GitHub and with Azure DevOps and use Azure Boards to help you track that work. One thing to keep in mind, though, is if you're integrating Azure Boards, there's different ways you integrate one Azure Boards with GitHub Cloud differently than you do with GitHub Enterprise Server. So with GitHub Cloud, there's an app that you can just install. With GitHub Enterprise Server, you actually have to go into Azure Boards and create the connection to your GitHub Enterprise Server. Look at me. I'm providing some, dropping some knowledge. Drop the mic. Brian's just staring at me.
Just waiting.
You don't have to wait, Brian. Brian's all mellow. This is mellow, Brian.
I'm just trying to be a good boy.
All right. Well, let's wrap this puppy up because it's getting late. Brian, where can people find you?
Blog.brianrandall.com, at Brian Randall on Twitter, or via email, brianr@mcwtech.com. And what about you, Mickey?
You can find me at mickeygousset.com or on Twitter at mickey_gousset. You will take my underscore away from my cold, dead hands. You can email me at my new email address, mickeygousset@github.com. You can check out my YouTube channel that's not been updated in at least probably a month at youtube.com/mickeygousset. But go check it out and subscribe and smash that bell. Or, you know, in general, check the show notes because you're probably going to misspell my name otherwise. And where can people find out more about the show, Brian?
As always, point your web browser to devops.fm. Reach out to us at DevOpsFM on Twitter and email the show at devops.fm.
Awesome. Well, it's been a good show, Brian. It's been good to talk to you. Listeners, it's been good to be in your eardrums.
Thanks for listening. Be good humans. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody. I still don't have any music for the after party, Brian.
You know, your daughter's slacking, you're slacking. I don't know what to do about you.
Well, I am, you know, quite the procrastinator.
So there's something that you say and a lot of people say that I was beat down about not using years ago that I'm going to bring up in the after show. And that is calling a piece of software robust, when what you typically mean is that it's rich. In other words, it has a diverse or rich feature set as opposed to robust. Robust means strong, healthy, vigorous, and that's not what you mean. What you're meaning is that it has lots of functionality. So,
agreed. But I've always, at least in the South, we've used the term we've kind of used the term rich and robust interchangeably. I mean, I understand your difference, the difference that you're pointing out there.
Yeah, and but the point is the fact that you do it in the South over and over again doesn't mean it's a good thing.
No, not necessarily. I agree with you.
So anyway, that was one thing. The other thing I was going to say, but you were on a tear, so I didn't interrupt, is the board rope stuff is very interesting and useful. But I think what I wanted to tell you was it's specifically on the boards feature within Azure Boards, because you have the various hubs. Right. You have the work items hub, the boards hub, the backlog. Son of a biscuit. It's the backlog hub is where you're going to see the roll up.
Okay. And then maybe I didn't, and that's probably where I didn't catch that. I knew it was in one of the hubs. I just didn't know which one. So see, again, that goes back to show you that my knowledge of Azure Boards is kind of limited, while Brian just did a kick butt, you know, put a whole bunch of information together over Azure Boards over the past few days. So he knows what he's talking about.
Well, and I do use it every day. So,
and Brian, you can interrupt me. It is okay.
Well, I don't like to step on the audio, you know.
Yeah, but when we do the editing, have you not noticed that I just turn you down so people hear me louder anyway?
No, I don't like to listen to my own voice, just like I don't like watching my own videos.
I really don't like listening to my own voice. I'll be honest, I really have a hard time listening back to the podcast to try to make sure. So a lot of times I just kind of spot check it, but I'm the same way with my videos. I hate rewatching a video that I've created.
Totally. I'm with you.
All right. I'm out of here.
All right. Talk to you later, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.